This is General Sir Walter Walker, tape two.
I took over command of 17 Gurkha Division. My directive said that my primary task was internal security in a city. And studying the situation in the Far East, I was quite certain that there was going to be a conflagration and that we would be required to go and deal with it. And so I changed my directive, issued my own directive, and said our primary task would be to move at the drop of a hat as a fire brigade. And our secondary task would be internal security in the city. Well, when the Brunei revolt broke out, which was the prelude to Indonesian confrontation, the first battalion to go and deal with it, who could get there the quickest with the most, was a Gurkha battalion. So all political objections were swept aside. The British battalion couldn't get there as quickly because they had families to deal with and these problems and so on. And the Royal Air Force were not accustomed to doing these things at the drop of a hat. And when the brigade commander got down to the airfield at Changi, he found each Gurkha being weighed, religiously being weighed, when he knew, we all knew, that the first thing that we had to do on arrival at Brunei was to get the airfield, and that every second counted. So he literally kicked the Air Force up the arse and said, you know perfectly well that a Gurkha weighs far less than a British soldier and that none of them could be overweight, and we've got to get these troops into Brunei as quickly as possible. And that was achieved by the skin of our teeth. And so what I said about a conflagration blowing up proved to be true.
A bit more about the schools of thought in jungle warfare.
Well, Ferret Force was composed of, as I said, people who had fought behind the Japanese lines, and they consisted of, it might have been the civil servants and planters, colonial servants, and policemen, and so on. And they had their own methods of dealing with things, which were not, of course, in accordance with the accepted doctrine against a first-class enemy such as the Japanese. As regards the SES, I suppose they were an elite force which learnt their technique under Stirling in the jungle, the long-range the long-range desert.
Sorry, in the desert.
Yes.
It's a jungle. Sorry.
Yeah, in the desert. So I don't think they had their own method of doing things, and I don't think they learned from anyone. They taught it themselves. And you have to really read Bill Slim's book, Defeat into Victory, to see what his opinion was on these special forces. For example, the Chindits. You know, he didn't really have a very high regard for the Chindits because they peeled off your best men. And they did not achieve really what they thought they would be able to achieve. And so one has to be very careful indeed when you start raising special forces. I think the SAS are an elite force, incomparable, and they learnt from themselves. They had their own technique in the Malala Emergency when they dropped into trees. And I thought when I was in Director of Operations in Borneo that they might be able to do the same in Borneo, but and he developed these four men groups. He developed these It was John Woodhouse who commanded the SAS, who developed the four-man SAS patrol, or fighting patrol, which covered this enormous frontier in Borneo. And they were my eyes and ears with a sting. And they consisted of a commander, an expert in explosives, an expert in communications, in working the special set that they had, and an expert medical orderly. And they had this communication, and they were able to communicate right back to John Woodhouse and pass the information, and he passed it to me. And
format patrols?
Because the frontier was so large, it was quite impossible for the SES to cover it completely, and so the Gurkhas were used in the same role as the SAS, and they proved equally as efficient.
They were sophisticated enough to manage it.
Oh yes, yeah. And then it proved that they were not sufficient, and so I raised the Border Scouts against great opposition, particularly by the police. But I made a mistake. I armed them. And I shouldn't have armed them. They became my ears and eyes without a sting. And they were dressed in their ordinary jungle village clothes. And they passed, there they were tilling their land. And they passed the information about the Indonesians back to the nearest SES patrol. And that came back to me. And each battalion, in the end, had six helicopters, and we had the flexibility to move the troops. And against all the artillery training that you've ever been laid down, I split all the organization from battery to troop to single guns. And I could swing a gun underneath a helicopter and take it anywhere it was required. You must have flexibility. When I arrived out from England, having attended a course for 6 months at the Joint Services Staff College, I was appointed to command the first six Gurkha rifles. And on my way up to its base in Bahau, I was told by the divisional commander, General Headley, to call on him at Seremban, where his headquarters was. And he said to me, and a lot of people work like this, he said to me in private, "You are going to take over one of the smartest battalions in the Gurkha Brigade. But they can't kill communist terrorists. And I don't know why. Their kill rate is very low, and yet their men are bloody good. You have got to find out the reason, and you have got to make them as good in the jungle as they are smart in their appearance." And so I went out with each company in turn to see what was wrong. And I found they were too noisy compared to what we learned against the Japanese. I found their tactics were shoddy. And we missed a lot of communist terrorists in the ambushes, which we laid on as a result of good information, and we were pulled out of Bahau and sent on 2 months retraining, rest and retraining. And once again, I worked the battalion as hard as I could in order to get them up to the standard that I required. And we were then sent down to Johor, and we started a knockoff communist terrorist, and the brigade commander, who was General Pugh, when we were eventually sent from Johor elsewhere, he had me up and he said, "You have killed more communist terrorists in my brigade than any other battalion, and I'm very sorry to lose you." We then went to Sungai Petani, and we took over from the Royal Marines commandos. And they were not killing very many communist terrorists, because they were sending their patrols, or sending their soldiers, their commandos, from the road into the jungle. I sent my soldiers into the jungle and came in behind the communist terrorists. And we started to, again, to make a very good killing score. So much so that on one occasion, acting on information, I myself was with the platoon which led the attack, because I wanted to see that they did rightly. I had the whole battalion surrounding this camp, or this meeting place, which was given to us on information. I went into the jungle by myself to meet a communist terrorist who gave me the information. And an officer called Major Hayward Surrey will remember that on the second occasion I went in, he never appeared. And I got a message from the head of the police in that area saying, you are in very close contact with the communist terrorists, and in fact you are surrounded. So I sent a signal on the radio to Hayward Surrey, and he came down and he brought me out with a company. But on that information, we laid this plan, which meant a night march, so that no one in the villages would know that we were moving. And I got the whole battalion around the camp, and these six leading terrorists were due to arrive at this particular hilltop. And I had one man actually in on the hilltop, and we covered him with foliage from the jungle, so that it would look as...
Sorry, just a second.
And we had one man actually hidden on this bare, bald head, covered in foliage, with a Sten gun, with a light machine gun, with orders to fire as soon as he got a target of the all six, when he knew all six were there. And the signal for the attacking platoon to attack would be that burst of fire. And I went round the day before and allotted every company its place, and we wiped out all our footsteps with branches and twig and what have you, so that the communist terrorists would not suspect that we were anywhere near them. And I remember so well, on this burst of fire, the Gurkhas rushed forward, and I was about just behind the leading section, I suppose. And those who were not killed by that light machine gunner were killed when they ran into the cordon. And I got a very nice signal from Field Marshal Templer from London, because we killed six out of six. And he sent me, he was back in London at that time, and he sent me a signal saying, "Well done, no, terrific." Because there were those who thought that the army should be in charge of intelligence and the police should be subordinate to the army intelligence. I did not agree with that, because the Malayan police, they were living in the country, had been living in the country, spoke the language, knew the terrain, knew the habits of the people, and were first-class intelligence. Oh, some were not as good as others, but I had a very, very close liaison and friendship with Special Branch. And I trusted them, and they trusted me. And if I had failed to pull off an ambush on their information, then of course they were very upset, and so was I. And I don't think we ever let Special Branch down after the preliminary period when I was commanding the first six, when we were not up to the standard that I required. But thereafter, I had a very close liaison indeed with the Special Branch, and later on, when I was a brigade commander down in Johor, I worked absolutely hand in glove with Special Branch, and he used to come and creep into my house at night and give me information on which I worked. And so the lesson is that in those type of operations, just the same as you must win the hearts and minds of the people, and it was impossible to win the hearts and minds of the CCO, the Chinese Communist. Therefore, you had to win the hearts and minds of Special Branch, and Special Branch had to win your hearts and minds. And it was no question of the army being superior to the police, or the police being subordinate to them. It was the other way around.
You mentioned hearts and minds. And again, one always thinks of this is the phrase developed by Templar. Mm. Can you talk about Templar? And perhaps, I mean, he obviously did put the ginger up into everybody, but tell us about Templar and how important he was.
I mean, when there was a nasty incident, he slapped a curfew on. And he said to the headman, and you won't have the curfew lifted until you give us the names of the people responsible for those murders. And I'm going to do it by sending round a box into which you'll put your leaflets on a piece of paper. You'll put the names, and those boxes will be flown to Kuala Lumpur and will be opened in front of your headmen, so that there's no hanky-panky. Then you'll be let out for 2 hours a day until such time as you reveal the names. Then he got results. He was as hard, I think, on soldiers who did not achieve success. He was a marvellous man to work under, because once he realised that you were doing a good job of work, you got praise. I remember so well, and just before I finished command, when we were down in Ipoh, the policeman there was bad, the security committee was bad, and he said quite openly to me in the car, I was riding with him in his car coming down, he said, "Walter, what is wrong?" I said, "They're all dead wood. They just haven't got that grasp of the situation like one they was accustomed to up in further up in Sungai Siput." And that very evening he called them together. And he absolutely blasted them to pieces. So that they realised, he was cracking the whip, and he was going to stand no nonsense.
It also presumably made life difficult for you, I would have thought.
Well, it made life very difficult for me, because they knew who'd supplied the information.
So
when I learnt a lot from Templar when I went to Borneo, but unlike him, I was director of operations, but not high commissioner. And therefore, I had no powers over the political administration, and the police didn't come under me, whereas Templar was the overall director, and the police and the government and everything came under him as High Commissioner. So he was a very, very strong position. Well, the troops would often go out in the jungle for weeks on end and achieve no success because they were searching the jungle. And if they hadn't got the information on which to work, then they had to find it. And they had to find out where the communist terrorists were. When they were working on information, of course, it was different. And so a lot of the time the troops were going into the jungle and coming back having achieved no success in the way of killing communist terrorists. Just before the end of the emergency, I was commanding 99 Brigade in Johor, and there were 100 hardcore communist terrorists left. And the way I tackled it, and John Davis of fame wondered why I was holding this symposium, and I had all my battalion commanders, and we had a model, and I made the battalion commanders tell me exactly how they were going to tackle their particular area in order that we could eliminate these communist terrorists. And I got the other battalion commanders to pick holes in the plan, and the police to give their opinion, and John Davis just listened. And as a result of this symposium of the commanding officers and the police, I evolved a plan on how we would eliminate these remaining 100 hardcore communist terrorists. And I remember Julian Emery coming out as Minister for the Army and coming into my operations room. And I had the names of the remaining communist terrorists on the wall. Photographs, more photographs, and we put a red cross on their face when they'd been eliminated. And I remember Julian Emery saying to me, "Where are they?" And I said, "They're there, they're there, they're there, they're there." And he said, "How do you know?" I said, "I'm working on informers, special branch information, and my knowledge." And I used to send up a officer. He was my intelligence officer. Well, he was my GSO-3, who retired as a general. I used to send him up in an Auster at dawn and ask him to see where any smoke was appearing from the jungle. Because I knew that if there was smoke appearing, I knew where my own troops were. If there was any smoking appearing, there were the communist terrorists having their morning meal. And so we worked also on that information. And the Commander-in-Chief of Staff came across to me on so many occasions and said, "How long do you think it's going to take to eliminate the remainder?" And I said, I gave him an exact number of weeks. He said, "Because we want you desperately in Singapore because of the elections for the independence, and this chap Lee Kuan Yew, we think he's going to give trouble. And the sooner we can get your troops retrained from jungle warfare to internal security, where you don't shoot on sight, the better." And in the end, we did. I gave the chief of staff, who came across, I said, "I will have Johor cleared by Christmas 1958. And so it was. And we had the troops had some marvellous, hardly quick to say it, chases, because you can't chase in the jungle, but follow-up operations. And they would kill one, and the rest would get away, and they would follow up. And it was a question of whose jungle warfare technique was the best.
I'd love to.
Well, I think Commanding a battalion, of course, is what you join the army to do. And that was the height of my ambition, was to command a battalion. And by the time I'd finished commanding the first six, without blowing one's own trumpet, I think it's fair to say that we had notched up a pretty good score of communist terrorists killed. And then when I commanded 99 Brigade with the object and the orders, indeed, of eliminating the remaining hardcore in Johor, that was a challenge, because I knew that the elections were coming off in Singapore and I was wanted there. And to eliminate the hardcore, remaining hardcore, was a tremendous task and a great satisfaction to pull off.